Mr. Higton, Reel 10. We were talking about your time at Stalag 4B, Milberg, and you were talking about this gadget, this immersion heater gadget. You were just finishing up on that, actually.
Yes. As I say, it's very efficient, but you have to be very, very careful. The one thing with an operation, you kept your fingers away from the camera. Otherwise, you get a very nasty shock because of no lawyer. We're actually using that to boil the water, which was inside the camp. So it was a matter of taking your own camera and leaving it to the operator, and then watching till he lifted it out, and then you can take your camera away and push your tea in after. So tea is alright, provided the water's not gone off the boil too much. But coffee is a bit of a devil to try and do that. Yes, it was these whiz kids. We didn't have one who made a little radio. It was half supposed to be a crystal radio like our fathers and grandfathers. But he made this thing, and it was kept inside a piano accordion. He got the news for us everywhere. Even the Germans would come and ask us what the news was.
How did he disseminate it amongst you? I mean, would there be one person in charge?
He did not have a note or a paper in case he pulled it. He had to read or listen to the broadcast, remember it, and he'd visit every hut in the compound. There's somebody on the door watching. And then they'd quietly tell us the news. And say, good day, then, and off and go from the next one. The Germans knew we were getting news somehow, and they would come and ask. Now, one of the old guards, they were very, very good. I mean, periodically, we'd get the red mark, the SS, which was to keep us quiet. But the camp commandant and his staff were always warned of these people coming. And this old boy made sure that the accordion had gone to be repaired or something when the SS came, and they never found it. A classic example is on D-Day. As soon as the British broadcast started, we got it. Within half an hour, the old camp did. But we had been warned before we read the news. Now, what I'm going to tell you is important, but I don't want to know. Please, no cheering. Just act up and keep quiet. And then we'll do June the 6th, didn't it? That was it. Before long, the German, because most of the guards were the old S4 men, S4 German. And they came asking us what it was all about. And I've got to tell them. I don't think they read it for a start, and then it came over to Germany again. You've not had down 66.
What about any other gadgets they made? You mentioned the immersion, the sort of water heater and the radio. Anything else you remember?
Yes. Carbide lamps. I don't know if you remember the old bicycle of the granddad had a carbide lamp. The idea was just a little bit of water, a little carbide, which made gas. Acetylene gas, which lit the lamp. Well, we could get hold of a supply of carbide, but we didn't have any lamps. So again, plenty of empty tins, big tin for the resin, two bottles, and a smaller one which fit upside down in it, slid up and down. And in the top of that one, on the halfway up, we had a bit of wire and a block of carbide. Hole in the top. Can, and as the top can sank into the ledger, the carbine got wet, the gadget forced the tin up, like the gasometer, and providing there was no air left in and it was pure gas coming out, a match to it and you'd have a nice flame. But you had to wait till the gas came out. If you tried to light it while the air was in, well, I really lost one last thing, a scar there, but I lighted one and it. The little red tank on the top, just, look, and finger and get rid. But these would keep going for hours, and you'd haul them out, look, you can see these things bobbing up and down. And the other thing we had was the German margarine was terrible. It was the old Essat soft margarine. Now, some rats found that it would make good lamp oil. So the German margarine was used for lamp oil. A shoelace for weak, and again, you could read it, right? Yeah, we had, and the actual criteria was the grower. Now, every two or three men had more convenience. You could get rubbish to burn, but not very good. Now, the theory is, if you could blow some air into it, you'd get a real bright glow, and it would boil your billy tin. So, it was all made out of wood, with a base, a plank, up and then board, probably 4 inches wide, 2 foot long. And on one end, would be two tins, one side down and one the right way, one on the top, with holes in, which you would fill with grass, leaves, anything. And underneath was another tin, inlet, an homemade fan, an homemade driving wheel, yet made out of wood, a couple of boat bases to connect the big one to the lift, one, wind it round fast, blow the air in, and lo and behold, the shavings were low, brilliant, and within a couple of minutes, he got the point of boiling water. And all over the camp, you could see people sitting in their clothes and winding up, and away they went. The blowers, all that.
Any other gadgets?
Yes. Things for keeping your feet warm. And cool. It was American. You can understand. It was milk backwards, clean. It was dried milk, but it came in a tin which was probably 5 inches wide and 6 inches deep. And after we'd use them, you'd take the lid off one, and the top and bottom off another one, and by a bit of judicial juggling, you can get the top one without a big old bottom, tuck it inside the one, and then tap it down and seal it with dry milk and water. And then a bit of old salt from the bottom upwards, and you've got an insulated jug. And this was nice for keeping tea or coffee or cocoa warm at night after the thing had closed down. Because the Germans didn't let you out after not. So you got twilight, you was inside, and that was it. But I had a real posh one, and something made it for me, a real posh one. It was surprising if you got a couple of socks on, 3 weeks spend, how warm it kept stuff at night. You can get it made before you went to bed, get in bed, and then before you got bed down for the night, a hot drink. Better than any back door class. Marvellous.
What about the food there? What was food like? Was it much? It'd be different from the Italian food.
Yes, when we first went, we said, "Oh, this is marvellous." We've not had anything like this. You can get a quarter of a loaf, or a loaf between 4 of you. The chap who got the loaf and the last pinch. So they immediately tried to make it fair and square. You know, the cheese, and you're trying to get a lump of the, I don't know what they call it, semi-fine black pudding. And then, during the afternoon, you get a good pint of really thick soup, not the thin stuff the Italian does, but really good stuff. And occasionally, they would give you a tin of meat. Give us a tin of meat. Which wasn't like our bully beef, it was more the stewed beef. You know, you can boil it out sort of thing. So for a start, It was very good, and we were also getting a pair of weeks, which really kept us, because in that pot you get about £8 of solid food. So for a start, it was really good. It wasn't so the wall progressing and the apples melting the elevator hole, things started. For a start, the parcel went down from one for two men. And the bed actually went down as well. And then I pulled one between eight as we went west. But we got to move over a little bit too fast here. Can you see one thing which went on in the camp?
Yes, that'd be good.
We had a real good football field here. We built ourselves a swimming pool. As I've said before, the elf ran, although we couldn't see it, I think it ran in the loop around the camp. And some bright boy found out that 4 or 5 foot down we had water, which was seeping. And we got permission from the Germans. Again, we had a pair of cigarettes. We had 10 chores, which we had to look out in the morning, and we had to book them in again, not twice. And they made sure they got the 10. We had a dog to watch us, so we don't do anything. But gradually, we dug and dug to make more of it. And then we continued to dig till we had a swimming pool at least 100 yards long and about 20 yards wide. We got plenty again, so it was a matter of 10 in and 10 minutes digging and another 10 in. And that water kept us level. And it didn't go rancid, because it was filtered as it came in and when it went out. And I swam in it, and quite a few who couldn't swim learned to swim in that camp. And it was a good thing, that looked really good. The Germans didn't do it. The one thing they didn't join in, they didn't come and swim. They joined in many things, but they didn't come and swim. Well, the problem was sitting with that close and whatnot. One or two little niggly things that went. Occasionally you get the young guard coming in the morning. They came and camped in the other beds. Just to get your bed and just camping. Bill boys, okay, they're walking in. Okay, off you go. You get a young girl, you've got a bit warming on the building on the Russian front or something, one or all. And we had one chappy came in regular. And then the married young girl, what a teacher, all your pins went in there, the jellies were collecting every day, all your tins went in there. And this chappy came out every morning. The first thing he did was that it booked that tea chest. And they laughed like that when the tin was spilling all over the floor. So the lad said he was stopping. But filled it with soil, put a few tins on the top. And that's why they came in and gave it an almighty kick. Yelled, and the time he came around, everybody disappeared and gone out the other floor, the other end. He didn't do it anymore. And he got his revolver out, and he was really good about it. Was gone. He disappeared. Yes, well, it's right carried on, but chiefly the Germans were okay, they were all right.
Did they come in the camp more then, from the sound of it, than because the Italians hadn't come in, had they?
The Italians didn't come in, no. But the Germans came into camp every morning, and they'd come around the huts to make sure that nobody was building trapdoors and things like that. Cursory examination, but at least it came in. The presence was there, they let you know that it was coming and they were in charge. See, the old boys from the First World War, they didn't bother me. Some of them wandered around and have a cigarette with you and a chat, and then off they go to the rifle store and so on. But there was a youngsters, chiefly those that had been wounded.
Were you still able to buy extra food like you had from the Italian guards?
No, they don't have generally.
You couldn't bribe them then, though?
You could, but not the food. You could bribe them for instruments in the band, including driving field, writing paper. You can rhyme if you've got many guitarists, you know, you want to put, you want to some teeth out. And he told me, and so he went, he hadn't gone to see the Camp Common. So he walked in and yes, we can get you out to them. But you realise we've got to send the guard with you and we'd have to raise the dentist. I'll just go through and check to see what he was. A while ago, this chappy made some players on the counter, on the desk. And the officer came back and I said, yes, and they looked and I said, it's going to be very expensive, you know. I'll try to find out how much it is. And off he goes again. So the chappy increased his offer. And he said, you got to bring back and look. Yes, it's all arranged. Now we'll send the guard in for you there too. Yes, you are, I said. And the chap who had the teeth out, he told me this himself. He said, I've been warned. He said, so I've got plenty of players with me, and not the only teeth gone. Yeah, you could bribe them in that way, but as regards, you couldn't throw cigarettes over the wire line because of the Italians. They were all right, the chief was just only SS looking, but Randall Hill was in the room. They did that now and then. And they are the best way to get him. If you got anything you didn't want to do, you have to stop it.
What about escape committees there? Was there any activity you were aware of or involved in?
I was aware of, no. I wasn't aware of any. I do understand that the rap was pretty often then, because they were in the bottom end of the camp. We didn't have any contact. You'll notice in the book when you get to read it.
This is your diary that we're taking photographs of.
Charlie Conroy and Bill Bryce, two very good lads, they were both amateur weightlifters, and they were brilliant. Well, I'd had a set of weights before the war, but I had no tradition, you know, just using the clean and jerk and straight lifts and whatnot. And when they knew I was interested, they said, oh, well, come and join us. The neighbours had had a bar and they got some tins and filled them with concrete. I haven't got all of that, I don't know, probably from one of the German, but they'd got a set of weights. And the only restriction we had was that, again, it was locked up at night. They taught me, I know I was a bit weak when I brought them, and I wanted to mark £90, and no way could I get my £100 over 10 minutes. And I struggled and struggled. And, so Bill Bryce says, really? He says, I want you to stay on £90 for the next fortnight. I'll do 10 extra lifts every night. So I did this, and after the fortnight, I went down the bar, and he put the bar, he said, there's £100 on that bar, I'll pick it up. And it went up like a shot. We certainly knew his training and what to do. Yes, I learnt the clean and jerk and the deadlift and all the rest of it. It was good tuition. I never saw either of those two again after the left day. But there was another lad named Reg Reddington with us. I think he's from Walsall, somewhere along there. And it was after the war, I'd got the Matlock back. So I knew Reg was a cyclist. I went around and come along back on that, there was Reg Reddington. So I said, yep, Reg. So they pulled up and they looked across and his face lit up and we had quite an after together. So I've not seen him since. Yeah, but the characters we met there. There's one chap who was a designer of women's clothes. And I thought, well, what did you offer? No. Obviously, it's a very good, very, very professional one, isn't it? two sort of guy, met a cartoonist, and I still remember his address, and then Croydon, 21 Annie's Crown Road, Croydon. And I tried to find him, but nobody moved, but they didn't get on, nobody moved, I don't know. And he was a brilliant cartoonist. I got one or two. Nothing like that, which he did for me. I've got a couple of portraits, which he did. And I think his address is probably in the back. Leo Bradshaw. 221 on his home room.
And
now, I've been in the library and I've looked at all the telephone books and I can't. Whether he's got it under his wife's name or whether he didn't get home. But I've got a portrait of him in the notes.
Were there any other entertainments that were developed there that you hadn't had in Italy?
Yes, I say we got this theatre, which was, and we got four chappers on trombones. I'm trying to think of their sort of on the play, sorry, Mary Bells. And really glad this one, a selection of Salvation Army tunes and Black Man tunes. You would probably get them once a week. The four of them, and look at the trombone. And then in there, they'd visit, probably three or four at some one night. But they were brilliant. And then you get the harmonica player. And the favourite was the radio players, where there'd be a little corner hooked and with blankets and wind it off, and we'd have a little lamp in there, and the artist would be, you couldn't see them, turn all the lights out in the hall, sit, and you could hear them, and all the old favourites, all the old plays that they played, and they'd have a little bit of sound effect in with them, with the drums and all that, but they were brilliant. It was just while sitting and listening to the radio, because they didn't have television anything, and they had the same radio. And it was just might be sitting at home and listening to the radio.
And what about the theatre? Any or shows, what were they like?
They were brilliant. Again,
were you involved or just in the audience?
At that point, I wasn't involved. We got to Yakutstown later and got involved in the property business. Property supplier. So. But at that time, no, I wasn't involved in that. Only weightlifting and swimming was involved in. Yeah. It was an experience to be only undertaken once. It was colourful. I think it affected my life. No doubt about that. But it was something I wouldn't want to do again, and I wouldn't want to wish on anybody else.
How was your morale, if you know what I mean? And because some people get depressed in POW camps, some people don't.
No, I never got depressed. I was always on the lookout for something to do. As long as I was busy all day, and if I got nothing to do, I'd walk around the perimeter. I think when you read the diary, you'll find it. I'll roll my boots out and I can get the journey to end it. And I have to go with some plumps. And the first time I went, we've got no plumps to fit me, so I had to wait a bit. And yes, it's in this, and we're towards the end. But yeah. I think the secret of imprisonment is keeping busy, keeping the brain busy, finding something to do all the while. Yeah.
What about some of the lads who did get depressed? Were you aware of that?
There's one or two moody ones. I don't think it was too much depression, because as groups, we were too busy talking together and working together, talking about what to do when you got home again. Houses, whether you could plan one, whether you'd be looking at two. And a rental home one, and all this came into it. You get people I've never met before, people local towns. Minas are out there, you know, on but I got a clue. I mean, I didn't know what he was saying. I got a clue. I got a bit there. But I met people there who'd been on local councils, and they could explain how you got to such positions, and how the parties work. It was an eye opener to me that such things happened. I mean, we lived in a house, and as I said to you before, the Rice family was paying the rent. But didn't pay income tax in the family of money. There was no such thing as rates, you could take out the landlord rent. So it was really an eye opener to know how local councils work and how county councils work. And more than that, we had lay preachers, RC priests, and then I did it in the colleges. And every night in our pale, there'd be somebody willing to talk about something. I mean, for a teacher or a student, it was an ideal thing. He could, once he got on his feet and he got a captive audience, and he could talk away to his art content. Yes, I learnt more about life, I think, in the prison camp than ever I knew before. Life and the people who lived in it.
They got to Stalag 4B on September 22nd, 1943. In December the 2nd, 1943, you moved to Jakobsdal.
Jakobsdal.
What do you remember of that move? Was there any reason for it? Or?
Yes, there was a reason. As I said recently, one of the first things the Jerez did when we got to Wilden was give us an X-ray. Make sure nobody got consumption, as they called it in those days.
TB.
One night, he got bent down. Whether somebody had misused the equipment, or he hadn't switched it off, whether it was a cover up or not, I don't think it would be done deliberately by the prisoners, because we weren't allowed in that area. I think more or less it was to cover somebody up who made a mistake. But we were blamed for it, and the whole lot of us picked out and sent to Jakobsdal, which was a punishment camp. As the name suggests, it's true. The name was Jewish Town, Jakobsdal.
Whereabouts is it? Sorry.
I can't tell you where it was, because we never saw a map. We dropped off this train, miles from anywhere, not a house inside, middle of nowhere. And all we could see was a wire. We dropped off the half of the cattle trucks, over the rail, and into the compound. And in the compound, in separate parts, were Poles, Russians, French. Italians were doing the dirty work. They were doing the latrines and doing all the other jobs. We were kept sickly apart. We did occasionally manage to have a word with the Russian. And it was a punishment camp.